Okay. And what do I have here? Where's my slide decks? I don't know. Lost my slides. Leave. Where's slides? I can't reach any of my menu bars because Zoom is covering everything up. Okay, I've lost my slides. We'll look for them again here. All right, session two, reverse chronological. We love that. So I just want to, so I don't have anything technical this week, but I wanted to congratulate everybody on getting their submissions in. Oh yeah, we should do this. So how do I put this in full screen mode? There's like a mode thing, right? Full screen. We're gradually learning how to use this version of Zoom. And as soon as we like are comfortable with it, I'm sure they'll change the UI again. Yeah. So on the left, congratulations, everybody. You actually like wrote all the words in all the papers, which is on some of them it was a little tight, but it's good. I'm really proud of all the papers. I really like all of them. I think they all tell an interesting story. I was telling people that I like the flavor of the topics that you've all chosen. I think that they all provide a bit of insight into something new, which is what we're all trying to do, and a bunch of interesting topics. So congratulations on all that. I also am enlisting things that showed up in my open review for NeurIPS, which went through review just a few days earlier than the ICLR deadline. And to my surprise, all the NeurIPS reviewers or the ACs or program chairs or something like had pity on us, because pretty much every one of these papers had split reviews where some of the reviewers, had recommended reject and so on. But the NeurIPS, gods looked down kindly upon us and actually accepted all these papers. And so congratulations on everybody there as well. So we have a lot of things to tell the world. Now, just getting the paper through this peer review process is sort of the first step of the process. So there's a lot of we should create websites and clean code repositories for people to use and, explanatory materials, make sure the archive is all up to date and all that type of stuff. But congratulations on getting through these stages of the process. It's a sign that people appreciate kind of questions that you guys are asking and the research that you're doing. So congratulations, everybody. Okay, let's go on to the platathon. All right, who's this? Who is this? I can't see on my screen. David A.
David
All right,
A.
David.
Okay, so last time I gave an introduction to this task, and just as a reminder, what I'm doing is I'm training a model on to mimic choice behavior according to randomly generated preference weights. And so what I'm doing here is I'm like, well, so what is actually being trained? So I take two checkpoints, and the first checkpoint 1000, which is on the top there, can perform the choice task. But when you ask it, like, if you were to do this task, what weights would you use? It doesn't tell you anything with any real relationship to the choice weights. So you can see like the green line here is the introspection behavior, and it's quite low at the start. And so then I take this adapter that I've trained, and I or like set of adapters, and I
Wait, so
remove.
hold on. So sorry. Choice behavior only.
So
What does
like
choice behavior only mean?
so like I guess, so basically, if you're like you are Alexander the Great, you're shopping for a toaster. Toaster A has like these five attributes with these values. Toaster B has the same five attributes with different values. Which toaster would you choose? And then you train it just on that, and then later you ask it, if you were choosing between like two other toasters, what weights would you use to decide?
And so what weights you would use is the introspection task,
Exactly, yeah.
but then which toaster would you choose is the choice task. And so you're training only on the choice task.
Only on choice task. And what you see is like initially the choice task performance goes up, but the introspection behavior does not. So that's where these two checkpoints come from. The checkpoint 1000 on the left or on the top can perform the choice task, but cannot perform the introspection task. So we see that the blue line, which represents choice task performance, is quite high before you ablate anything, and the green line is quite low. On the bottom, this is like the fully trained model. Both are quite high. And so on the top left, what I'm doing is I'm ablating every layer of the trained adapter previous to the layer index. So I guess what I find interesting here is like I've drawn this red line on layer 40. And so what we see is like at layer 40, if you remove everything at layer 40 and below, on checkpoint 1000, it really doesn't change much. So like most of the interesting training is happening at the top of the model or the end of the model. But on checkpoint 3000, which is the fully trained one, which can introspect, at checkpoint 40, if you remove everything previously, like it does quite affect things. And so I guess this is, I guess, the source of my like temptation to speculate wildly that what happens is at the beginning, it's kind of like training in hard heuristics, like cheap heuristics, and that's why you can't introspect. And
So that like at layer 50 or something.
at layer 50, yeah, at early checkpoints. And then by later checkpoints, what happens is this, like the thing that's changed kind of moves down towards layers. It finds the place where it's kind of like the natural slot for this information. And at that point, the pre-existing introspection pathway can activate and access that information and faithfully represent what the model is doing.
If you can put the information at layer 40,
Yeah.
then it can introspect.
So yeah, right.
What a nice story.
That's right. That's a story. So I'm trying to figure out if we can confirm that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
what are the ways of verifying that? That's a nice story. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I've seen this data before. Anyway, if anybody has any good ideas on how to verify that story in a different way, that's going to be your challenge.
Yeah, definitely let me know.
Okay. Thanks, David. Very cool. Oh, what's this? Andy.
Yeah. So I'm like trying to understand this thing called singular learning theory, which is a bunch of like math people who are trying to understand how models generalize basically, and trying to see if they can come up with some theory of deep learning that actually tells us something. So, okay, the main like thing I would like to maybe explain here is that imagine on the XY plane you have like your weights like W1 and W2, and then on the Z you have like your log likelihood or something. And so the really nice case is represented at the top, where you have some like really nice looking bowl shape that you imagine when you imagine ideal things. And you have like a nice, you can understand this nicely by looking at like the second order Taylor approximation and Hessians and stuff. Like seems like in practice, like things are a lot messier, and you have loss landscapes that look like more degenerate. So some people talk about flatness, which is like your kind of like curviness is less. But what I'm trying to get across here is some notion of volume rather than flatness. So what I mean by volume is you can, let's say you look at the minimum point of your loss, and then there's a question of like how much volume around it or area around it in parameter space can you go, where you like kind of keep the loss roughly the same, you keep it within like some epsilon. And you can see that between these different geometries, this quantity is very different. Like at the bottom, there's like a really wide volume of like basically parameter space that behaves similarly, like the losses within some epsilon, that's like the z-axis thing, versus some like very sharp thing. And then there's some argument that's like an Occam's razor like argument, where you could say that the like bottom ones with like larger volume like this would, generalize better because there are simpler solutions. There's simpler solutions in the sense that you need less bits of information to encode them, because like you can specify anything within that huge, big volume on that bottom right, if you're looking at that bottom right, and you get like a similar solution compared to some very like sharp thing. Anyway, so this is like what I'm reading about, and I don't really understand it all very well yet, but like
So is this volume thing sort of is it like related to higher order than second
yes,
order?
exactly.
I
So
see.
if you look at like, for example, like x to the fourth, if you do like a 2 second order like Taylor approximation at zero, like this will not tell you anything. But x to the fourth should be differentiated from like x to the 10th or like x to the 20th. These are very different, right? And so you can't actually distinguish these from like second order.
So,
So,
did the singular learning theory people try to get at these higher order things?
well, they try and they think that like estimating this volume,
I
the
see.
thing to
Oh,
do.
okay. Is it they just go up to the volume instead of after derivatives?
Right.
Okay, got it.
Right.
Nice. Thanks for the explanation.
Yeah. Hey, I had a question.
Yeah.
So what do you mean by that blue region, blue volume? Is that in that region if you move, so your log
I'd be right behind it. There's some
stays
people waiting
between
downstairs now.
the... Oh yeah. It actually could someone hit back just under this question. Yeah, so if you like, so what the volume, if you just look at the like right hand column, what that volume is showing is like if you start at the like 0 point, like how far outwards can we move such that the loss only increases by like an epsilon?
Oh. Take an epsilon ball from the bottom, and then all the things which are that all the loss curve that's contained in the epsilon ball.
No, it's not an epsilon ball from the point. You're saying if we're here, how far out can we go such that the loss for all of those corresponding points is like only epsilon above
Right.
what
What I
the
mean
minimum.
is the intersection of the curve in an epsilon ball. So the curve would be inside the epsilon ball.
I'm not
I think it's
sure.
the same thing, but it doesn't
Okay.
matter.
So like if you have a very narrow cone, moving a little bit will like increase your loss a lot, right? But if you're very flat, then you can move a lot without changing loss very much. And so in some sense, like this is a simpler solution because you could be sort of like anywhere in this space. You like need less bits of information to specify where exactly you need to be, versus some very precise thing that you need to get exactly on that point to obtain that loss. That's kind of an intuition.
So is it more like let's say we're training a model and we need to reach to the minimum
Yeah.
of an objective.
Yeah.
And so if it's more kind of like a flat region, so we can like reach at any point in
Yeah.
that flat region and we'll like achieve a greater or better convergence.
Or yeah, similar loss. But the argument here is that like maybe these regions give you better generalization because they're simpler. So anyway, yeah, that's yeah.
That's really awesome. Well, actually, since people are coming, I think I'm gonna try and like make space.
Okay.
That's
Sounds good. Very good idea.
like I can just like do something to the
Wait, I got you.
oh,
like, yeah, we can just shift. We'll just shift by one.
Okay, so the volume thing is kind of like almost like intuitively like a probability that you'll land in the optimal loss region with respect to the task at
Kind
hand.
of,
So
yeah.
kind of like saying, oh, it's like a generalized, it can understand, learn the thing without overfitting to some like very
Okay.
obscure
Still
solution.
talking about
There's a
NP.
lot of ways you can get there. It seems like a positive.
Yeah.
Should we go on to the next one?
Yeah.
So last week I was presenting essentially whether a chain of thoughts can generalize in terms of like sharing these chain of thoughts across different models. So it turns out like Like it is actually better, like the perceived model quality of the GL is better with generalization. When I was checking for data where the answers match but are wrong, I noticed that it included answers that also did not reach a conclusion. So I like after dropping those, I realized, yeah, essentially the updated figure is that like if you have better generalizability, can actually the users prefer those more as opposed to like the ones being better a little more accurate or not. And in terms of like another project that I like started like discussing working on is essentially like hallucination inter. So okay, that's it looks very small from here. So I'll just kind of like read what each of those questions are. So like one, can you tell which instructions or questions are high impact, low impact? And so usually like maybe refusal, like the work from like refusal vectors and those may be like relevant to be able to find what are considered like high impact and low impact. But the reason why I care about this is for the next question, whether we can like offset like representations of like subtle to severe hallucinations. Because instead of like stopping a hallucination and saying like okay like you could say for example and I don't know but sometimes we like some of the hallucinations are kind of like reasonable inferences and so maybe instead of like completely stopping hallucination we can go from like subtle to like getting like egregious ones for those that are like low impact in sense of like creative writing for example. And so in order to be able to go back and forth with that, it's kind of like the third being like a steering sort of thing, whether you can move across different quadrants of hallucination and impactness. So there are some related works that I'm like trying to like now get into it more, but I thought of just sharing it in this meeting if people know something like work that I have. There we go. So, yeah.
You should try. No.
Yeah.
Like Sanjay, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm working with her. Yeah.
I like Adam Kalai's way of looking at it, where there's different. It's not about the fact that's being hallucinated, but it's about the context. Like if you were just joking around with your buddies, then they don't really care. You got some fact wrong. But then, you know, if you're in a court of law and you're testifying, you know, after having sworn an oath or something like that, deciding whether to send somebody to jail, then it's like a little higher stakes situation. And it could be exactly the same fact. It could just be like, you know, who is Justin Bieber's mother? Right. But in those two situations, that very same fact, you know, you might want to have different calibration. Right. So I'm kind of interested in whether models are aware of these different contexts. I don't know if that's a different spin on it. Maybe just a comment on that. I really liked you didn't put this thing on, but you mentioned you're looking at the false chains.
I can, yeah.
No, you don't have to put it up. I just wanted to comment on this piece of data, and it's worth taking a look at Kalina's paper in the end. So Kalina has this measurement of how generalizable chains of thought are to other agents when you use a chain from one agent to the other one. And you know, last time I'd asked this question, oh, so if it's generalizable, if the first agent made a mistake, if their chain led them to the wrong answer, does a generalizable chain lead a different agent to the same wrong answer, or does it somehow, you know, ignore it? And I thought it was pretty interesting because Karina has this measure of generalization, and her measure of generalization is totally, you know, correlated. It's basically the same, you know, it's proportional number to if you only look at the incorrect following. So if a model is making what Karina calls a generalizable chain, then it's just a convincing model. It'll convince you. It can convince you of the wrong answer, and which I think is kind of interesting. It's this nice way of showing that the metric is orthogonal to accuracy, correctness, whatever, right? It's just the convincingness of a chain. So anyway, I thought that was cool. It was a cool measurement that you made in like the last week of the paper, and it was a nice addition, I think. Okay. Gio.
To add another comment,
Yes.
like in fantasy stories,
Yes.
there is always hallucinations.
Yes, it's
And
all hallucinated. It, nothing, none of it is true. In that context, if you stick too close to the truth, then you're not doing your job. It's like negative calibration.
Yeah, so this was a fun thing I got to work on as part of the paper with Arnab. So this was applying the filter heads to something that could be useful in practice. So here on the left, we have a lie detector. So if you have some sort of context and you set up a predicate at the end and say, is anything in here false? Then you can just use the attention pattern to discern which sentences are false based off of which period is being attended to most strongly. So you just set some upper quantile above which you want to underline, and then anything that is false according to, you know, these filter heads gets marked as false. And then on the right, we're doing the same thing, but with sentiment. So this is just a cool way that you can have like sentiment analysis or lie detection without having to actually do any training. You just have the filter heads of the model and you have some predicate and you can match to it.
Nice visualization. Yeah, it's really cool.
I'm curious if you train a probe, whether the probe has similar, like whether the heat map looks similar or whether it would like different.
Yeah, we actually did train a probe and curiously, it was a lot more noisy. So this is much more clean than the probe, which is a cool thing too.
Oh, did you report that?
No, we didn't.
It's always hard to report a negative result because, you know, you're like, oh, we didn't spend that much time on it. And so do we really trust it? Right. But yeah, but it's a nice one. If you build some confidence, you could add it to a future version.
Yeah. It's cool that it started attending to the God delusion once it sees the God, as soon as it starts seeing that book being mentioned, it's like, wait, this is. It
starts lighting up.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. Carl Sagan was an American football player.
I like how it, like, for a boring movie, it flagged it. Like, oh, wait, no, sorry. I thought that was the lie detection one.
Negative sentiment.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was... so it's boring. It's okay. This is.
It would have been funny if they thought it was a lie.
Yeah, like, Jaws isn't boring. What are you talking about?
Cool. Yeah, it's very nice. It's very nice.
In some previous experiments, we were able to probe what the letter identity is out of a diffusion model's like internal states. But the way that we went about doing it, it was dependent on the size of the actual letter patch. So we were interested in trying to identify some kind of way of also doing this probing that's invariant to like how big a letter is in image. So one thing that but this is an experiment where we basically just took each token that is in the letter patch that has some kind of ink and just tried to probe it from that token instead of the entire letter patch added together. So you can see that there's like a heat map of the class probability of classifying that the letter K as the letter K. And you can see that that letter information is also just like within the token level, not just at the, like the patch level.
And so the tokens are the tiny little like pixelated things, is that right?
Yeah, really so small? The way that the like image is patchified within like the transformer diffusion model, it's like it comes out to like 16 by 16 patch, something like that. Yeah.
Wait, each letter is 16 by?
Oh, each token.
Oh, each token is 16 by 16 pixel?
Yeah, 16 by 16.
So what are you showing in the middle and versus the right?
Yeah. So one thing that the next thing that we thought was we were interested there's in some kind of attention pattern or was trying to find some kind of attention heads that does this sort of copying task. Like we're fairly certain that there's some kind of attention pattern that is able to say there's some capitals here, this is this particular font or is this letter. So the idea here is that we just have some kind of target mask. So we have some mask that's like the letter P here. And then we're just going to optimize, we're going to produce attention patterns for each head and find the ones that maximize the F1 score that maximize the target mask. So it's like we're basically finding the heads that attend to the same letters within an image. So You can see on the right that like the blue square, it's kind of hard to see, but on the bottom left, the P, that token is attending to like the on the top row, there's another P on like that specific token. So that was one thing that we were looking at. And
if you looked at the same head on one of the other letters, then it would find the other instances of the other letters. Is that the idea?
That's the idea, yeah. But it's kind of noisy. I haven't been able to like visualize it fully. And we also have like there's a large combinatorial space, I guess, of like, correct. Oh, like is it the same, like varying the font, or like is it a 10 maybe? Like could you find the one that tends to like both capitals and lowercase? Like could you like along those lines? I haven't like gotten to. But this was just like an initial like concept that we did.
Really cool.
It's nice that one little token does have the letter in it. Otherwise, it would have been, I don't know how we would have figured out how to like concatenate all the different sizes of the letter. So
yeah,
you can just look at one token and it actually it's like.
Can you tell which token ahead of time?
Can you tell which token?
Yeah.
Well, I guess what this was showing is like any of the little tokens in the letter.
Oh, any of them would work. Yeah.
Well. You can probe that letter.
Okay.
Which letter it's in.
So they all like this disjunction of all the tokens were.
Yeah, that's what the left.
Cool. That makes sense. Nice. Very cool.
That's mine. This is so some context for people who are new. We trained a small transformer to learn like abstract algebra problems. And so one of the things that it learned how to do was like solve the identity cases. So the identity is like something times like A times X. If A is the identity, like you get back out X. And so the way that the model does this is you can see there's these two attention heads up here. So one head, and the yellow one, promotes like both of the answers that are in the question, so like A and E. And then there's another head that demotes the identity answer. So instead of saying like A and E, now we just say like A times E, we get rid of E, so now it's A. So I thought that was a pretty elegant solution for like how this would work. And then on this little 3D plot here is kind of showing the model has like a clean separation between how it represents identity facts versus non-identity facts. So like it clearly is like dealing with them in a different way. This is when you do PCA on the hidden states. And then on the bottom is just kind of an example of like how we're verifying that this is what's happening. So the top sentence is what the model normally answers for like a query DF. And so this one turns out it's not an identity question. So it spits out E. But if you steer in the direction like that moves stuff towards the identity facts, then the model starts putting out both of the answers in the question, so D and F. And if you insert like a fake fact that happens to demote one of the symbols, because the model thinks one of those is the identity, then it'll drop out the logit for the identity case and promote the other one. So like in this third case, we're sticking in an identity fact that makes the model think D is the identity. And so the logit of D drops down and then it predicts F. And then if you do the opposite where you make it think that F is the identity, then the logit of F drops and the model predicts D. So yeah, I thought that was a pretty elegant way that the model solves the identity. That was pretty fun. So we threw that in the paper. Thanks, Rohit, for figuring that out for us.
That's very cool.
Have you tried steering the other direction?
Yeah, so if you go in the opposite direction, so like if the model is going to predict an identity and you go in the opposite direction, then it'll just predict something else that's not.
Kind of random.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You can also control it. So for instance, you have a very good fact where the final answer is not an identity. and you introduce a very out of distribution false fact saying one of them is identity, the clean model would say, oh, I know this, this is an identity. But then if you steer it in the negative direction, it forgets this false fact and starts predicting the right answer again. So it's like a more controlled.
That's awesome.
I like this appearance of this switch. You know, you see these switches, you know, conceptually all over the place, but this is like, there's a single MLP because this model is so small that when you steer it with this one global vector, so it's a fixed vector, right? The screen vector you've got, it has this effect on this one specific attention head's output, where that attention head could have a lot of different outputs, right? And so if you think of it like this funny transistor, you know, you've got this signal that's like transmitting lots of interesting different types of information down this very specific wire, right? And then you've got this one-dimensional little switch that seems to be able to turn this signal on and off, right? That you can either let it pass through or not. I think it's really interesting. I think that, you know, at some point, if anybody's interested in like how the heck an MLP, like a single MLP layer, does that acts like a transistor like this, might be worth looking at it in detail, maybe making more plots or something. I think that it's cool. I don't think we've seen, you know, an instance of a neural switch, like a neural transistor, that's as clean as this one. You kind of need to understand it. Okay, next one.
Oh, this is mine. So this book is from a paper from neuroscience, and they speak about the confusion in the literature about the concept of theory of mind, that there are a lot of papers that uses different terms. Sometimes it's called theory of mind, sometimes it's called mind reading, sometimes it's called empathy, etc., etc. And also they try to measure different things with different measures, and each component, each paper treats different components, and each components measured by different ways. And they tried to organize and to make a concise minimal criterions for what is theory of mind or empathy or mind reading. And they mentioned two minimal criterions, the non-merging and mentalization. Non-merging means that the ability to separate the self and others, to understand that I have a different perspective from others. And the mentalization is the ability to mentalize, to have a different perspective, to take, to in Hebrew there is a term, to get into the shoes of a different person, to be able to look at the world from a different perspective. So
nice. So this came from which literature? It was psychology, you said, or?
Yeah, it published in the researchers are neuroscientists, if I'm not mistaken, and it was published in the psychology literature.
Thanks.
So are they kind of viewing this as like this, the criteria, the minimal criteria that they come up with are like the floor? And then, you know, it's okay to add in other things in addition? Or are they viewing it as like, no, all it is to have theory of mind is just this minimal criterion, and when people add in other things, that's, you know, superfluous?
So they mostly concentrate on if someone is suggesting a new measure that do not include those criteria, so it doesn't mean theory of mind. Or maybe someone is measuring something that is sub-levels before those, before even reaching those criteria. So just pay attention to that.
Okay, great. So they're saying these criteria are necessary, but they're not making a sufficiency claim.
Yes.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay, so this is
also the same thing that Adrian was talking about, except from the other angle. So we're working on this project of trying to understand how flux represents like letters, or like text and images. So what Adrian was looking at was in the image space, but this week I was also trying to look at just like in the text embeddings. And so yeah, like, and so when you're conditioning flux, you could, ask it to generate an image that's just like banner with text that says, and then give it like a random token. And at least for the examples I've been trying to do stress test this a little more. It's like usually really good at like actually putting all the right letters in there, even if the token is kind of like random and seems really unlikely. And so I was wondering if that means that it's actually storing the letter information in like the text embeddings. Because I feel like it would be a lot easier if the text embeddings already have that. And so I was trying to probe to see if that's the case. So I was just training like a little like logistic regression thing for each letter, just to say output one if the letter is in that token. But actually it's like not very good at this. I might have not had enough training examples, so I'm rerunning it again with triple the training examples. But at least like when I ran it this time, the test accuracy or the test F1 scores were like, the max is like maybe 0.6 or so, and then like on average it was like 0.2 across all the letters. And so I'm not sure if this just means like I have to do a better job probing, so I'm trying with more examples, or if it means that the model doesn't actually have, or like the text encodings don't actually have letters in them, and maybe the model either in the image side breaks it down into letters, or like it doesn't even need letters and it's just like memorizes what every single token looks like without understanding the compositional aspect of like, oh, all these tokens are actually made of the same units basically. And so yeah, that's the challenge, is to try and figure that out, because we know at least on the image side from what Adrian was showing is that it does actually, it does represent these letters, but yeah, I don't know.
Have you ever thought about the letter forms of the FedEx logo? Have you ever looked at the FedEx logo?
Oh, you mean with the arrow?
Yeah, you notice the arrow, right? It's in the white space between the X and the, right, whatever the letter it is, right? And so, yeah, so that's what I wonder when I look at your probe that doesn't have anything. I wonder, oh, does this mean that the model isn't thinking of KTE in terms of the black part of the letters? Maybe it's thinking of it in terms of that funny white space between the K and the T. Maybe it knows the shape of that, right? Kind of like the way you notice the arrow in the FedEx logo. Yeah.
Which it'd be really funny, but then it would have to do that for all 30K tokens. But maybe it did do that.
Or maybe it's just maybe instead of having a big table of what letters look like, it has a table of what bigrams look like, and it says, oh, this token has these two bigrams, and it has a KTE bigram and it has a TE bigram. Yeah, I don't know. It's just,
There are clinical tests in the psychology for a gestalt.
Gestalt.
Yeah, and they are concentrating looking at the shape or the what's around it.
Yeah.
You have the same like text and like in different ways of presenting, like you'll look with the text that says KTE, and then you'll take the representation of that, whether it like focuses upon the KTE, but let's say capitals and casts, and to give KTE capitals was it supposed to focuses more on the background or again the ultimate output.
We're saying that you're looking for some information on the embeddings, so that if the embeddings actually connect to the information of the letters. So is it more like, let's say I have two tokens, one is butter, one is shredded. So if they are projected in the embedding space, so if they contain information about the letters in the embedding space, so they might be very similar in that space. Is it something like that?
So is that yeah, I guess what we're wondering is that it's in some on some level Yeah, if like
Because
you have
the
two
only
tokens at the
difference
same
between
level.
butter and shutter is B, it has D letter in the front and is an SH in the front, and the rest all of the letters are same in the token. So there is a chance if there is if like tokens are represented in the embedding space, so those two embeddings will be very similar.
Yeah, at least in that subspace
Yeah,
whatever
and
it's
that's
in.
a pretty good way.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of what we're
Okay.
wondering. Yeah.
Okay.
And this would be just your single character, like a banner with the text that says K and then tramp over K.
Yeah. But I guess if you did that though, then it would just be there's only one token for each. Like if you just have one letter, then it's like I'm not sure if that
For
would.
that simple case, would the regression work? Like if you just have a single token in the banner?
Yeah, I mean, I could try. You mean that just as like a sanity check kind of?
Yeah, so
That's how I viewed it.
the way that Flux would look at KTE is if, however, the T5 tokenizes KTE, right? So it's possible that it's not KATE and E.
Yeah, right. So this is one token. KTE is one token
And
in the
then you
T5.
probe for KTE.
So yeah, KTE, this is like I only use single token words, and then probe that single token.
Oh, you're just probing for KTE here. It's not K and T and E.
So KTE, but then have like a probe that is like a probe for K, and
Oh, I see.
then a probe for T and a probe for E. Yeah. So like so far I was only restricting it to token one, a single token, and then just like the probe should output one if that letter is in that token. But to the model, it's just like one token.
So from Adrian's experiments or your previous experiments, it's highly likely that if you just have a single token like K and probe for K, it should work, right? Like
Yeah.
you have some attention layers that look at it.
Yeah, I think so.
Then do you think it's just the problem of tokenization?
Yeah, I guess it's a, it seems like, yeah, I don't know, but I don't, yeah, I like cause like you know, it's strawberry like models, the strawberry thing, models don't know how many R's are in strawberry,
Yeah.
so like they don't know all the letters in each
So
token.
when you're looking at the token embeddings, so are you looking at the T5 token embeddings, or are you, so this is, you're looking at the very first layer, right?
Yeah,
Trying to
so
see, yeah.
actually, so I was trying it at every layer. This was the best layer, but most of
Oh,
them
which layer
are
was this?
this. I wrote layer 15
Oh, 15, pretty far
in
in. I
the
see.
right and like the non-single block ones. But honestly, it was kind of around this for most of the layers. It was like, and so yeah, so I was assuming, like, I was thinking maybe T5 doesn't have it, but then once it goes through enough layers of flux, it has it. But even then, it doesn't really work.
Right. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's disappointing that, I mean, you'd think that the T5 embedding should know what letters are in each token, like it should be in there. I guess it doesn't. It
Yeah.
makes the transformer learn it.
Yeah, makes flux learn.
Yeah.
But then it, yeah, but then it doesn't seem like, but maybe also I
But
just
then
need more.
Flux also doesn't learn it.
Yeah, but maybe I just need more data, so I'm rerunning it
Oh,
still.
I see. Just make it bigger.
Yeah.
Creating with more data. Like, are you, like, are the tokens that you are choosing, like, essentially towards the end? Like, what if you have the same thing saying, like, KTE text written on banner and like is that KT
Oh.
like in that position because that one is more focused on the letters KT.
That might be a good way to of getting more examples out of it because right now I basically am limited by how many tokens there are and stuff. That would be good just to like bury it like that. It might also be helpful. Yeah.
One last idea. It might, like, the model has to know that it starts with K. And like the second letter is T and that the third letter is E, right? Like not just that it's a bag of words containing K, T, and
Right,
E.
the order.
So I wonder if like probing for like starts with K or ends with E or the second letter is T.
Yeah, because the positional
Because I'm thinking of like if I'm a language model, I might like, I don't know, like have the first letter in this space and the second letter in this space. But if you probe for like contains K, these might be represented kind of differently from the perspective of like a linear probe.
true.
Yeah, nice.
I am actually running for the first letter right
Oh,
now,
nice.
too. So hopefully,
I hope it
if it
works.
doesn't work, I don't know what to do. Yeah, but Sharon also said that KTE is like one token itself. So maybe it's they don't consider it KIT. Yeah.
The information has to be in there somehow, right?
Yeah, it has to somehow know I have to take this one token and now I have to write K and T then.
Yeah.
That's great. I love it. The information has to be in there somehow. Where is it? It's not there. There's no, it's not. Right.
Well, what happened?
Oh, Nikhil. Nikhil's drawing a blank.
I just had that thing.
Oh, you put the same screenshot I did. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just my replay.
Congratulations.
I did not have any thoughts.
That's okay. That's totally okay. That's great. All right. Oh, Rohit has something.
Oh yeah. So this was this is something that I very briefly spoke about in the previous slot. So the current work was like you can train a meta network, like a feed forward network in the blue up there, which takes a reference image and a text description of your reference image. And it gives you like a bunch of vectors, which you can pick and then use it in your diffusion model to customize this particular reference image that you have. So for instance, if you see on the top row, that those are like some of the reference images I used, like a dog, basically. And I take the delta for that dog token and plug it into my inference prompt when I use the prompt photo of a dog swimming in the ocean. So what I was hoping for is that I would get the dog in the reference image to start generating in the diffusion model's inference pipeline. And it works pretty good. Like, so once I trained this for like some 3 days of compute, it starts learning what dog it has to draw, and it has a pretty good generalization of putting it in different instances. But then my training data did not have like the right, I didn't really check it really good, and it had a woman in it. And even though the prompt was photo of a dog, and I give a reference image of a woman, it somehow just plugs in a woman and then puts her in an ocean swimming. So the left column are the actual images generated by Flux. And everything afterwards are just these customized vectors plugged in. So even though the model has a heavy bias to draw a dog, because, well, I asked for a dog, and I give this this strong feed-forward networks vector to the diffusion model, it's very happy to just change it into a woman and then keep women in different poses. So it's, I think this was very interesting. Yeah, I don't know how much of it, like what to take out of this, even though like I would call this like some heavy debiasing of concepts. So it's, the model should have a strong opinion what a dog should look like, but this one single vector, if it can turn this bias away, I think it's pretty interesting. But yeah, that was a funny observation.
Does it work for anything? Like if it,
it worked for anything. Yeah.
So you feed in a different picture?
Yeah, I feed in a different picture of a woman or a man, and it just works.
And it can just make that the dog.
It can just make that the dog.
I see. And if you put in something that's not
a living thing,
that you put a hot dog, anything like that. Oh, this hot dog. Yeah, that's right. Hot dog is a dog, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just curious, like, if you like larger dogs, smaller dogs, different color dogs, still
all work. Yeah, I had more from like previous lot on like from a previous Friday meeting. There were like other large dogs, different breeds, and still works.
Yeah.
But it only works for dogs because I trained it only on dogs. Yeah.
And the backgrounds don't make a difference.
Yeah, backgrounds don't make a difference. So the new set of experiments we are running is, so for the reference here, I'm just using image of a dog. But I can also use a reference prompt called image of a dog posing in front of a background. And now I can take the background token and plug it into any different generation, like a person walking in the background. It could bring the background from the reference image and drop it into the...
Yeah.
Have you tried using like multiple dogs in the reference image?
Yes. Multiply. Yeah. It usually draws the how many ever dogs are there.
Oh, so if you have two in the reference image, it'll draw two.
Yeah, but you can. So the way we build this feedforward network is basically it has a cross attention. You can literally block the cross attention for one of the dogs, and then it just draws the other dogs in it.
Oh, I see. So you could. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you could supplement it with a pointing user interface or something.
Yeah, yeah, you
that's
can.
Interesting. Huh? That's interesting. Yeah, it's just ready to be a product, the thing.
I think so. Maybe close to a dog product.
Exactly.
Why do you say it only works for dogs if it clearly doesn't only work for dogs?
I mean, this should have some bias towards dogs. It's only trained on dogs. The network has only seen dogs. So I'm guessing whatever attentions it has learned or whatever MLPs it has learned is probably fine-tuned towards dogs.
Yeah, like dogs have so much variation that like I would expect it can abstract enough away that it would just work.
Maybe. Yeah, I should like take a totally different reference image and reference prompt and see how it works. I haven't done it yet. I was way too confident about it.
Now you guys are thinking kind of like machine learning people. So you train it only on dogs.
Yeah.
And maybe you're done. Maybe you don't need to train out anything else, right? Because like maybe now it knows everything. Like you could put a spaceship there, whatever, you know, like, right? Because like, you know, it's like profound generalization, right? It's like instruction tuning. You just train it on, you know, 10 different types of instructions, and then it can do anything, right? Because it's learned the general idea of an instruction. So now it's just learned the general idea of just substituting the main subject, right? Maybe you're done.
Maybe, yeah. So I should say the feedforward network was initialized from some of the diffusion model's weights. So the attention and the MLPs in it are initialized from diffusion model. So it's possible that it knows all of this.
Did it previously already know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have a base model that you're modifying that knows everything.
Right. Yeah. Even diffusion model knows everything.
Right. So.
But the vector has to come from feedforward network, though. Like right. For the customization.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah. I think like it's the model is more kind of recognizing what's there as the main object in the image, and then it's using it to project on different backgrounds. That's why you, like when you even put a woman in the image, that's the main object. The woman is the main object in the image, and when you ask it to put it in ocean, it just often extracts the main object and put it in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could potentially have thought dog as a main object, right? Like a foreground.
It can be verified, like if you put a cat or another person,
right?
Or maybe something which like kind of is in the foreground,
yeah,
in the background, and there's a clear contrast between them. And if then it puts that also in the ocean, then it can like kind of inference that it's generalizing on the foreground object and putting it in the background.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. So yeah, it works for all living things. Animal.
Yeah, we're not sure about non living
things. Yeah, if the non living things work too, then potentially I could say it's a foreground background.
I feel like another axis of generalization. Right now, you always put the vectors in the dog text token.
Thread. Yeah.
So, how about if you generate on the leftmost column, you generate a photo of a horse or photo of a cat and apply the vectors
of the dog into the hat?
Use the dog model, but apply the vectors to a cat.
Oh,
a horse. See if it still works.
That's interesting. I can try that.
Yeah. Maybe it's just a sense of like you just need to put the vectors in some token where it represents subject.
Yeah.
And where you can just swap the subject on. It'll be interesting.
I think so too. Yeah. Or like you get a blend of a cat and the dog in the picture, maybe.
Yeah.
Which would be nice to think of.
Exactly. Mm. At least testing the limit and see where it fails.
Yeah. I thought you were suggesting take this dog token and put it in like the photo or like a swimming token and see how it works.
Oh yeah.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like dog has to go into a dog, but I haven't tested dog going into like a totally different token.
Yeah.
I can try that.
Cool. Is Rohit the last? So anybody else with a last minute update? Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
Do you want to quickly talk about the project's website? Is that...
Oh, the project's website. Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Thank you. So,
cool.
So now that Isolar is finished, we should do some housekeeping on our lab website. And so there's a new subdomain that's not really linked anywhere, but if you go to projects.spalllab.info, then Avery has put together this really nice website that has a card for every page that has a web page. Most of our project pages are not linked anywhere from the homepage on BioLab. And so I'm going to add a link to the projects website prominently so that people can find all the projects. But right now, this is not in a great state because some of these things are just a citation with no text. Other ones, we have this nice text that you can kind of see with the thumbnail. And so what I want to ask everybody to do is, make sure your thing is linked here. Copy from your abstract or whatever, right? Just some nice piece of text. Find a nice thumbnail that you think is beautiful. Lay this out. There's instructions on the GitHub. So actually, what is it? So is it under my username?
Yeah.
So I can add you all to this GitHub that you can push to. What's it called? Projects?
Projects.
Projects
Yeah.
Web? Projects Web? Something like that. So yeah. So actually, after we wrap up here, you can just give me your GitHub user IDs and we'll just add everybody to this GitHub. And you can push your modifications to this thing.
It's a yeah, do you want to really quickly? So it's a YAML file. YAML
Oh yeah, let
is
me.
too scary.
YAML file.
You'll figure it out.
YAML's not scary.
It's not scary.
Oh wow, so look at this, really nice. Look at this. Author is this. Wow. So nice. And so let's look at a fully populated one. Oh, there's this description. There's this extra. Wow, what, like, this is really nice, like, formatting here. Concept
Yeah,
sliders.
sample.
You put the thing in.
Yeah, so there's like two or three things you need to be careful that are all I think in the README. If you have colons in your titles, which is very common, that is a
Oh, you
reserved
couldn't do
character.
that. Don't put colons in your
No,
titles.
it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Oh, you shouldn't as a writing. As a
I'm
writing.
just
Oh,
joking.
okay. Sorry. Okay. Well,
Oh,
sorry. Many titles of papers have colons in them, I have found, and so that ruins the YAML formatting unless you put it in quotations. That's easy to do. Just be aware.
I
Is it
see.
an
And
instruction?
then how do you, and then after you do this YAML, then you
Then
just
you have to run Python Henry. That's it.
I see. So if you don't generate it, then the actual HTML won't publish when
Yes,
you
and this is
push.
because of your complicated box that sucks up those.
Not that complicated. Not that complicated.
That's it. And the URL just has to be, accessible. The image URL has to be accessible, and the project's URL just link to that, and you're good to go.
Wait, so should we put like a, I don't know if we should put full abstracts here, but
Oh,
maybe
that
like
I
a
don't know.
few sentences or something.
Yeah, I would. So I'd make it snappy.
Yeah.
You can. You so it actually can be. So that's what the extra thing is for. So there's like, keep it really snappy for the main description. But then if you want to just keep on saying stuff, you can put it in the extra. And I actually I've done that all over the home page. And if people like click
Oh, like
on,
what says more?
yeah, it clicks on the more and then, right. So you see what I mean? So like. Yeah, that's the more thing. I don't know if you know this. Notice this funny more UI that we have. I'll show
It
you what it
was
looks like.
coded very strangely, I have to
It is.
say that.
It is very strange.
No, it was fine. It was fine. The selector was very strange.
But it's designed to work very well if people browse around with JavaScript disabled and stuff like that, then it like continues to work, right? So, it's very old-fashioned.
Question about the projects. I'm assuming that if we add our own information, we'll just push it into a new branch and then we'll let you. So,
You say?
like, if we all decide to update like the projects page, then like I assume each of us have to just push into a new branch so
No,
that.
just merge. So like, it'll say, oh, you have merge conflict because somebody else was like just pushed 2 seconds ago, so then you got to merge and
Okay,
then
so just
it'll
hold
be
it.
okay. It's like since the YAML is pretty clean text, it'll merge cleanly. And you know, and if you merge wrong, then we can pick through the Git history and you know, find it again. Yeah. It'll be okay. So yeah, so update all that stuff, you know, sometime this week, and then I'll update the homepage and link it in and stuff like that. We gotta get this website all rationalized. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's roughly in reverse or like newest first by year, but that was a complete guess. So
We put links to everything. Yeah. So if your project is secret, you can like delete your thing. It's fine if you want to keep it secret. That's all right. But you know, you can put all the stuff in. Okay. All right. Okay. Cool. So that's it. Thank you, everybody.
Sure, they're lost. So the Euclidean loss distance is less than
that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but loss is just a number. So it's like,
they're all going out.
Like, yeah.
So absolute value.
Yeah, I started. Yeah, the ones with
that's right. Yeah, well, yeah. I thought when you said like epsilon vol, I was thinking of like epsilon for amateur space, but it's not like that.
Yeah.
I guess just put it on the.
I was curious about the singular three-year agenda, like what it entailed. They fully understood it.
Yeah, I'm looking into like, yeah, if you're curious about it, it would probably be helpful for me to try to explain it.
I love it. Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, if you want to take me up on that, like,
I'd love to.
In the coming weeks, yeah.
Especially the more mathematical part.
Okay.
I like math.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
it goes pretty deep. I don't know how deep I will get, but
I could serve as a reasonable litmus test for like some of the stuff. I don't know what the actual theory is for it. So I don't know like what branches of math or whatever, but
it gets into like algebraic geometry.
Okay,
which I'm sort of avoiding.
That's kind of cool.
But. Like, yeah, I don't know. It like spans a lot of stuff, like classical statistics.
Not really.
But yeah, but
I don't really.
Algebra is the part that I like. Don't have a lot of.
If it's like,
if you try to learn it, I haven't done algebraic geometry, but I've done a fair amount of algebra and real analysis and whatnot. So I could probably at least like
hear for the music that.
Like I certainly would be able to like probe you in a way that you would have to think and answer, and maybe even just like help understand it. Because
that could be helpful. Cool. Yeah, maybe in a couple of weeks when I'm like ready to be tested.
Yeah, you already were playing a whiteboard session.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you want a pastry, David? You ready?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
I don't think I have time. Nice results. I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah, cool. That's interesting. I think that's a good setup to be. Is this of somebody?
I don't think so. I think they were just playing them.
Okay.
No one wanted to
forget it. Yeah, so I was thinking if you need any collaborators within the lab, I'd be happy to join.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Though I'm not really sure how much I can. I should do that. Yeah.
I mean, if you just want to come to the meetings, like that'd be
great. Yeah, so the reason for me to, or the motivation for me is I think I started thinking for auto interview.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think your project seems, is probably the most auto interview we are doing in the lab.
So, yeah. Auto interview, I guess I could see that as like agents, or I could see that as
training the bottom. I'm broad with the definition. It's not really agent, I get it, but I'm not fixated with any of the projects.
Yeah, I think it's. Did you see that paper that I put in last night? The linear direct or the language models and code training data recency in a linear direction.
No, I just saw the title. That's it. Yeah. Really read and.
You think it's real?
What's that?
I feel like it's probably
that,
real, like kind of trivial. You feel
okay,
like
what's
it's real?
What's the result? Like the training data which comes later.
You can train a probe to find out like when this training data came in.
Yeah.
And so they do. I haven't read the paper, but they do like a synthetic setup where they have like six different runs of like they vary the order. And then they also find that they can train those models to self-report.
All right.
And what?
Yeah, the ICLR is over. What in the world are we going to do with the mining group? Yeah.
But yeah. I guess like
there's never a
that seems like an interesting
people are available.
Like if you train the model to like self-report enough interesting things.
The one that has models, the most
like a general
but there's never an hour block.
Yeah, how did you train the model?
This 7:30
So the impression I got is they were just like they took a model.
Uh-huh.
That had been trained in some order. And then they just like took a bunch of training data and they were like, okay, entity, 75.
Internet's so bad.
Like,
right.
What percentage of the way through training did it count? And that's just a fine tuning data set. So it's like Michael Jordan, 75.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, if we pick any day, I don't think David is available on Wednesday. I don't see.
Yeah. But I imagine.
Honestly,
what
do you have
something
to do
like that? The norm.
I think
factors
nothing.
Is lower,
usually like
something like trivial.
Anything.
But they say they tested for a bunch of stuff.
This one,
to
1 to 2.
But...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the fine tuning one.
Or
yeah.
After that, I just like to have.
So
that.
Basically, they sample some
Tuesday, yeah.
Examples from their training data. And they have the index of that training data.
Okay.
Yeah.
Their entire data set.
I don't know whether they do index or percentage.
Yeah, something like some
okay.
quantization of where exactly it is in the
mm-hmm.
training data.
Yeah.
And then they are fine tuning another model.
The meeting
on that data?
I think they're fine tuning the existing one.
Yeah, but that's.
So the idea is like.
Oh, they're fine tuning existing area.
Yeah.
And
because it's more interesting if it's self report, right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it is able to self report itself.
Yeah.
Really.
Okay, I have a meeting.
Yeah, if it was another mode, it would just be random.
And, okay. It might be related to what you were saying, the layers thing as well.
Like,
I don't think there's
yeah. really any good.
Oh,
like,
right.
You need
yeah,
to do
the where exactly that thing
like,
is encoded in the layers.
Is like,
at which layers the information
yeah.
was encoded. It
like,
might be
like the only
thing
proxy.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what
like these three,
mm-hmm.
like in between 11.
And sorry, and what about the probes? I did not get the probes part.
And then if you
the
like
just that they can like
it doesn't
fine tuning.
Oh, they can
just, like,
train the probes as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then if that
I mean
layer thing is
the next good alternative.
Yeah, you would expect
one of my
yeah, so then you can see the layers where the probes are actually effective.
Yeah, that would be cool. Sure. Yeah.
When it gave
but I mean maybe
they I don't want to work on
it. Yeah, I that yeah. seems like yeah. a trivial thing to do.
Okay.
But so the auto interpret that you're interested in, is this like training a model to be faithful? Self-report?
I've not thought through it, but my general the place where I'm coming from, I think from the project that I've done so far in my PhD.
Yeah.
But the people really
I think those have been very labor intensive.
Yeah.
Do a lot of work to get it done.
Maybe
and now I feel that maybe I can still do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
But
why?
I can do it now. I think so. I feel confident doing that.
Yeah.
So it's probably try to do something new.
Yeah.
I feel automation is important there.
See, but that's like
it's
really automation. Like Chris, I don't know, Chris.
Future. I think it's a little bit odd for because like I said, Atticus is joining Fire Engine automated and serve.
Okay, maybe there.
It seems a lot easier outside of academic labs because it's so software engineering, you know.
That's his too.
But not to say there's not interesting.
Yeah, stuff. But I feel that the space is open enough that we can contribute ideas even from academic lab.
Definitely ideas.
Yeah, Robic is I think putting in.
But then we
moved
that around if we had
the
jam.
Yeah,
Natalie.
I think they hired. I think Atticus was leaning towards that.
Look at her,
his motivation is probably similar to mine. I think when I was working with him in my previous project, we were talking about this thing as well.
Yeah.
Because these things have become
maybe
yeah, could
very
animate the
I think he's betting on that now.
Yeah. Yeah, how would you do that?
Wait, who's for the Thursday morning?
I mean, the nice thing is, like, a lot of these techniques
Thursday
are pretty...
morning?
The patching setups themselves
would be obvious.
But...
Okay. And are they available? Is Natalie available anytime on Thursday?
I mean, the negative thing, if you have a ton of RL, it's just, like...
Maybe not at all on Thursday.
Like, one thing you do is something like Maya. But, like I'm studying tomorrow, you should try this.
Or
it's like,
Wednesday.
Do Maya.
But then Tuesday, maybe?
Just, like, do RL on this process.
Athena.
There's something
like, give it a report. Tuesday. And, like, it's the right
Tuesday. Did I say I'm unavailable at any time?
Or,
I don't know.
Yeah, if you, like, propose a patching setup, if it, like, do RL on the
We can do Tuesday.
I was kind of thinking about that as well.
Yeah.
Maybe we can train an RL agent
instead
of just prompting.
Maybe we can ask them.
A frontier model. And probably the RL would be good enough that after certain training, it might just be at a good level that it might actually.
Maybe we do on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
For what?
Yeah.
Or auto inter like we were talking about auto automated interpretability.
Well, like give an examples, come up with an explanation.
Sorry, what?
Like give an examples, come up with an explanation.
Or
in general.
Yeah.
Like propose an experiment, interpret it, propose the next experiment.
Yeah, so basically automate my job.
Automate interpretability.
But doesn't Maya already do some level of it?
That is very neuron level, very, very microscopic.
What's Maya?
So
the only, it's like,
so that's
like,
it's just me and you. Yeah. Or me and Natalie.
Like,
everybody's
so automated interpretability.
Like,
how does it work?
I'm not actually busy everyone.
Like, John, only block is
like
Monday to Wednesday.
I think it's similar to, similar to what
there's
people
like
do
an hour here,
figure out
and like an hour here.
See features,
but
it is
there's
iterative
no
in nature.
15 people.
It's not
right.
just you
so
get
I
the example and you get a description.
I kind of
but
don't
you
be
give,
in charge of picking, but I just pick a time.
For SAE is like say like one
figured out.
I feel like you just do like get your max activating examples and get like the auto interp on those. So then in the Maya one, I think like
morning or
start off with, like maybe by
like,
saying which
just, like
when like
yes,
what I guess property I think the model might be looking at, and then I think they have like a description of all these different neurons that they try to then go back and forth and experimenting.
Yeah, so the main difference is basically the iterative nature of the iterative
the
nature.
The task is the same. You have some SA feature that you
not,
want to explain.
Okay. No, yeah. but they look at the neuron level things.
Fine. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, idea is the same. So given a neuron for which you can figure out its activations or different examples, can you describe its functionality?
Yeah.
I think it's multimodal, right? Because you can give an image, right?
Yeah, I think they were looking into
it. They're not like, how does the model do, like, theory of mind task?
No. That's the objective here. But it's not.
You're working on this, like trying to automate interpretability.
I'm started thinking about this. What we were talking about.
Seems cool.
Yeah, I started to think about it.
Yeah. How do you create good training data?
Seem to be.
So that's
we also are what you're trying to achieve. Our laptops while we do research.
You know, that's like what that, when I was doing the Anthropic Fellows program, they had like an opt-in thing that was like record your screen so that we can train our automated automated alignment researcher on your screen computer usage.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
I opted out.
I don't know.
I think basically everyone opted out.
When I was interning with Apple, the first day my manager said, everything that you do is Apple's property. Everything.
Did you have to record your screen?
No, I don't have to record my screen, but...
They probably had like software on your computer.
Who knows that? Stuff. It was their laptop.
Yeah.
They installed some bunch of software, which I barely understand. I might have been doing it, but yeah. But I think that was the first thing my manager said.
Yeah.
Everything that you do is basically logs for the Apple.
Crazy.
I mean, it seems like the way you get good training data is like you come up with a nice...
Yeah, maybe you ask them the
poll. And then you can just like throw a computer
at it. But what
are
the
people that can out there? So.
Well, I mean, like you could do something like Maya. You could do something like even if...
Chris and Merrill.
Right. Okay. I know, but if you're like... I don't know, let's say like Natalie IOI. You're trying to do IOI or something.
David
and
Natalie
are just Nicole. Like, here's some distribution. And then you're trying to come up with like a minimal circuit or a minimal set of units.
And
you can just kind of search over that space. David. And like you have a continuous measure. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. He was recently mostly at industry lab, right? And now he's here.
It'd be nice to like design some like toy models.
Which course is it?
Or something.
Oh, wonderful! I didn't know he was teaching that. That's great.
So it's really I was thinking about that.
It's really fun. And, like
last
really
year,
good,
like RAS, but RAS is so weird. And so you could do like the closest I've seen is.
And I talked to him about
it's called interpret.
It's
a little bit more natural.
Yes,
but the problem is like
that's also using this like is it RASP?
It's not RASP, but what they're doing is they're doing like interchange eventually where they generate a pulse model, generate like a circuit, and then like train this model to respect the interchange interventions behaviors according to how you'd expect. And then also like behavior according to you know, if you throw in random stuff, it doesn't change anything.
So it has sort of ground truths.
It's a little bit like you're kind of restricted.
I thought it was tracer models, but okay, maybe I'm wrong.
Tracer plus training, so it looks more real or something.
Yeah, that's the like that. Yeah.
What should be the
amount? Yeah, semi-synthetic.
But they just got small models, right?
Or Nova Stat.
I don't know. They're all
It's like generate
kind of features. I don't know.
With different random
whatever. I think the danger would be that. Yeah, we don't really know what the units or like the granularity of the causal model should be. So maybe you're just like, maybe this is just like not how models work. It's just like high level circuit.
I see like everybody's
Yes, and much larger image models too.
Yeah, there's a benchmark. There's a score.
Oh no, so it's not tracer. It's not tracer based. They compare it. So they have like these are the weight magnitudes. So it's like
this is one plot that was like it's a distribution.
Right, that's what I'm showing right now. It's
like, I feel like it had them some sense for like also again, a lot of things, but pretty sure
the
it acts as a process map.
Another thing is just like training like small models. Like how I learned in perp was like doing interp on toy models, which are trained on like leak code.
Okay, we got it.
Like three in the list, or like.
Well, you know what I mean. So that's
five. The max mod, or
any extra conditions.
But like, yeah, I don't know, things like this. You could train like I don't know, two layer
directly.
That's small, not really small. I can do these things, and that you can then actually like reverse engineer
or automatically. Okay. Right.
This, so, but you know, again, yeah, scores sort of like,
and
you still need to define scores.
But it's very specific.
Yeah,
second,
yeah,
but
yeah,
very
hard. Yeah,
I
mean, they're not like papers, but Cal McDougall basically ran this like
monthly thing, right?
A monthly thing, yeah.
And so, is it published anywhere?
Go to his website.
Okay.
Yeah. So for each one, he like posts solutions basically.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Oh, yeah.
And he releases the model, etc. And has collab with
the same. So if you
and when you say solutions, basically segments.
To our Platathon.
No,
then you want
like
to
an analysis.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's so, yeah. It's like the solutions are like not in the same like format or something. It's like
every other week we do.
In the same way that like not all papers written about interpretability are like same format.
Yeah,
they don't. I'll be back. The interface is not like a circuit of like these heads.
Okay,
right.
And I have to look
at interpretability seems messier than just
Okay.
No, I was actually thinking about you if they actually had circuits, we might be able to use it.
I'm trying that now.
Evaluate a few things. Few methods.
You could turn some of them into circuits, definitely. Yes. Deciding on the journal club timing?
Yeah. Tuesday or Wednesday looks like the best time.
Both that those work well for me.
Okay.
Starting next week?
Yeah, I think so.
How does like paper selection work?
So what we've done in the past is we'll like pick someone to be in charge of that day, and they'll either like pick a few papers that people can vote on, or just like pick a paper that they want to read. We'll choose that. I don't think there's you have a better suggestion for a setup, but
that seems pretty good.
Yeah.
And how do you assign people to days, like round robin? Like
usually. I should probably do that early. That would be good.
Look at all.
The easiest way I would say to describe something is as
what I like is you know, like the emergent miscellaneous paper where they're like, we asked researchers to predict ahead of time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was great.
I would love, like, every week I get a newsletter and they're like, here's the setup, what do you think the results are going to be? And then you predict the results and then they tell you what the actual results are.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do that to, like, yourself because we're going to be, like, contaminated by the abstract. Does that make sense?
So you say that again. What kinds of things you're trying to predict?
So, like, the paper we just talked about, the training.
Uh-huh.
I would love to, like, get a newsletter every week, and they're like, here's the setup. We trained a bunch of models. We, like, trained probes on this. We go, do you think this would be successful or not?
Oh, I see.
And
then they give you the ground truth.
Yeah.
But it's always going to be successful because it's like a paper, right?
Well, right. So you have to choose stuff that's like, it could go either way, which I guess is harder. But
yeah, like, you need some papers like decoys. You need some like false. You need some false results also.
Yeah, I guess you could do it that way. Yeah,
I bet you could set up like if you're not always reading the latest archive dump, then you could set up something to scrape.
Yeah, he had Claude to do it.
And like, yeah, just like set up a Claude instance that like scrapes
summarizes an experiment that somebody did, and then come up with like some fake ones, throw them in there, there's your, and then send it out. Like, I think it's pretty interesting to see like how good people are at actually guessing like what their intuition is. That'd be kind of interesting.
But the fake ones have to be genuine ones.
I feel like Claude could be pretty good at coming up with.
It'd be cool to see if David was better than all of us.
That'd be interesting.
What was the results with this like training data time thing?
What I took is like you can train a linear query to recover training order and the data reason to. And then two, you can train models to self-report.
Tell me where you are in your program.
I'm a second year undergraduate.
Second year undergrad.
So, yeah. So
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And so you're in computer science department. Like,
you saw some data.
Yeah. What kind of interest
you saw some data about? Which did you say first?
So remind me your name again.
Bro.
I don't know. I
started like teaching myself machine learning at LLM, so that kind of the end of my first year. And Oakland is a kind of quiet place. There are only 900 kids, so you get a lot of time to like learn stuff you want to learn.
So and you're second year in Oakland?
No, I'm second year in Boston.
Oh, you came to Boston.
Okay, so everybody from Oakland was the first year.
So that's how they all.
They tested a bunch of just
like we keep on changing the program.
Is it like the vector or something like that? My guess is it's something people like that were later in training.
The classes before, so they didn't have the professors in the classes to keep people longer.
Data and like a systematically
different. I'm glad that you're here.
I started learning machine learning and learned LLMs and kind of got into mechanistic interpretability because of near AI. And then I saw you talk and I was kind of sold on it. Yeah, it's very fun. I've loved it. I've spent a lot of the summer trying to teach myself.
I feel like the intuition is like
everything. So I don't know. I'm really excited to come to meetings and stuff.
The intuition is like,
if
you're reinforcing it. It's like the model is like getting it hanging out with earlier or something.
But in that case,
you see like data X, data Y, data Z. You don't keep doing
that's the Harvard
route, right?
Right.
They dropped to
eight. Oh, okay.
It would be different.
Right? Yeah, I don't know.
Why would the model put X?
It's only my fourth week in Boston, so I haven't been really anywhere.
There's no H in it, so you can just go by.
All
right, well.
You know, I don't know. It's possible that
yeah. So
like if you just naively shuffle the data,
the
like,
things is
yeah,
that,
that's what you would be getting.
You know, they have reading groups,
but that would be kind of a weird setup. Yeah.
They have different
they don't
kind of
explain kind of paper. They just say probes can distinguish.
Yeah. So one of the things I noticed was
we should read it.
I know.
Really quickly on stuff. You know. Spent a lot of time.
I want to read it. I didn't bring my
computer
today.
It's
like so feels very
spoken. That's right. That's right. So that's just my recommendation. I don't know what game
meeting.
Okay. You spent a lot of time over there. So follow this.
No, I actually fucked up and I ran some like Claude job overnight.
Mentorship applications for big programs. Like
I didn't expect it to take that long. I use like whatever TMUX or like
their own server. So yeah. So apply.
But then I woke up and it wasn't.
Hang out
yeah.
people
so I had to I can't shut off my avatar
so
you know,
like you say like
the
pretty
about
often so I'll probably be here
whatever
no it's just like still running
and for the
right
platforms that
kind
of was like only for
basically
if you have something interesting
in my hotspot
then you get your you can get your minute of fame just get you know ask David Atkinson for the link
okay
you can throw it aside.
I think it'd be more like a minute of feedback from you.
It's okay.
Anything else?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
It was really nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
I'll be back. Okay.
Why is this table so dirty?
And then there is a seminar at 12.
That's right. Yes. So there's more one person talking for the
whole. Oh, I have this. I have
I think I'll be back in a couple of
minutes.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Should we be recording presentations?
I think we are.
We are.
I know, but ought we to?
You mean you think we should not?
I think we should consider, like, or if have we
not?
I don't know. Well, so we don't publish all the presentations.
Okay.
So it's like an option on publishing.
So which ones are published?
So
So we have, how do we decide what should publish? So the person to know is Emma Bortz, who is our outreach manager for NDIF.
Yeah.
She is the one who runs our NDIF YouTube channel.
Okay.
And so far, the YouTube channel just has 5 talks on it out of the many, many dozens of talks we've recorded.
Okay.
So far, they're all external speakers, except for me. And but they have access, the NDIF folks have access to all our recordings, and they're sort of curating through them to see which ones would be good for a YouTube channel presentation. Every week, they want to sort of edit one more. Okay. And so if we ever record something that you're like, you know, I'd rather not have this show up on YouTube.
Yeah.
You just send Emma an email and it won't, you know, they'll know not to put it up.
I feel like,
okay. Does that make sense?
I feel like that should be the default.
Yeah. I think, at least Emma has asked if
she's always asking permission. Yeah. She goes around asking.
So I don't know if that's the
default. Yeah. So that is the default.
Okay. Only reason I bring this up is like, I wonder if, I don't know, if I were giving a presentation, I feel like I would potentially present or make certain decisions or say certain things depending on whether I know I'm recorded or not or something.
Oh, because you might not comment on your opinion about somebody else or something like that.
That, or like maybe there's something I'm not sure about, but like, you know, I might want to pontificate or something. I wouldn't feel comfortable, let's say, like having it in a recording on YouTube or something like this. Potentially, like,
that's right.
And for example, I wonder if the speaker from last week, like, might have told us things that he didn't tell us because he was being recorded or something like this.
Oh, I see.
It's a possibility.
It's a possibility. Yeah, it's a good question. So I guess the feeling that I have is, I bias towards putting on the recording just because we've been in a lot of situations where it's like, oh, that, it, you know, in retrospect, that was a really, you know, good talk that we'd like to share with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the hour, you can't go back and hit the record button.
That's true.
Whereas on the other side, like, you know, not publishing is easy to do after the fact. I do make a point to ask everybody, you know, is it okay to record before we have a guest speaker recorded? And so certainly we should make sure that people, like, are, you know that they can say no. That's totally fine. You know, including all of you.
Yeah, I wonder if it might be nice to ask before. Because I feel like if I was in front of an audience and I was like, no, like then it would feel
So should we record you or not? We'd rather not.
I do screenshot a tweet where somebody is bullying somebody else.
Would you rather not be recorded?
Yes.
So I think that, so we'll, that's a good idea. So I'll ask people, you know, privately whether it's okay to record.
Yes.
So Emma is pretty good about asking everybody whether it's okay to post their stuff on YouTube before it gets posted. So there's another double check. And then in addition to that, we edit the videos. So, you know, if anybody is ever in a recording and Emma calls you and says, "Want to put this on YouTube? It's like the best talk ever." And you're like, you know, I'm not comfortable with this 5-minute discussion that we had or whatever, right? But they will edit it out, no problem. So we can do all of the above.
Sure.
And then I think that for this kind of thing where people are uncomfortable saying something, the nice thing is, that's one of the nice things about having people come here in person. Like, I feel like, oh yeah, we should definitely take advantage of like talking to people in the hallway, talking to people privately.
Yeah.
You know, outside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Tell me how you really feel.
Yeah, tell me how you really feel. Right, exactly. Like, what is, like, what was behind this, you know, opinion that you had? You know. I feel like
I feel like hallway discussions are always more honest, even if recorded or not. Stand by the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. But good feedback. We should give people a more low pressure way of saying no, it's on recording. I'll do it. Cool. Excellent. Excellent, excellent. So yeah, it's interesting because there are various things that are funny about this world that we live in. You know, how online the world has become is one of the funny things. Like, you know, if we don't really have a YouTube footprint for the lives, but like if we had a YouTube footprint.
Well, so we're then going back to
a YouTube footprint.
Yeah.
Like we don't have like a YouTube audience. Right. Yes. But if we were to have a YouTube audience, then Lab would have more impact.
Talk about the confusion about the DNS.
Should we do that? Some people
think it's okay. I'm glad you didn't think about it.
Sometimes papers are like, have a 5-minute explainer or a 10
exactly.
So, like I remember when the like alpha geometry paper came out, like I wasn't gonna like go through the whole paper, but then the author like put a 10-minute nice explanation up on YouTube, and it made it very easy for me to like eat my dinner and like learn about alpha geometry.
Yes. So I think that the general feeling is the answer is yes. So like I guess so. Here's my weird professor perspective on this, right? Our job is to be educators.
Yeah.
And if the way that people are learning is on YouTube, then why the heck aren't we on there?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, sorry. Posted that one about the owls, but they changed it to eagles.
Yeah.
Alex, I posted that.
Yeah.
That was a really great video.
Eagles originally.
Okay.
And then they changed it to owls.
The original paper was on the eagles, and then the explanation of the phenomena was on the
owls.
But it's funny that you think the owls, they changed it to eagles.
So. Oh, I don't know. The video I saw had eagles. That's all I know.
Yeah.
But I know the paper is light on the owls.
Because the paper that the video was on was the original paper.
The original paper.
The video included a segment of recent
owl. Got it.
I'm that was great. This setting that
was great. So I'm going to zoom you, but I won't report. I'm going to zoom you with
your Okay. Are you in charge of the ring?
Either way, it's like you know, our end up on YouTube anyway. So
I'll get my say that. There's a 5 numbers.
You dump those books on my desk, and I want to like
yeah, you should go ahead and join
my bookshelf. Those numbers represent